Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
You're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with me, Ian O'Connell, is Dara O'Kaneda. Dara is from Tralee and is living with a condition that left him fully blind since the age of 16 years old. Sit back and enjoy the show. Dara, thanks a million for coming on today now. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
How are you keeping? You're enjoying the sun, are you today? You are?
I'm doing really well. Actually, I'm absolutely loving the sun. It's a gorgeous day outside. I just came back from a walk with the dogs and it's absolutely amazing outside.
Do you like getting out for the walk?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I really like getting outside and just go for a walk with the dogs and just being outside in general. And I'm a big fan of the sun, even if the sun might not be the biggest fan of me. The factor 50 has to go on when I go outside, to be all honest.
Yeah, I've been saying now ever since I had my accident and I sitting in the wheelchair, the tops of my legs get to 10 and then the rest of my legs, they're white because the sun is straight down to my knees.
Oh, stop.
Very good. I like to bring all my guests kind of back to the start, and we'll work our way through your story then. Do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself and your childhood growing up, and what was that like?
I'm here in Tralee. I'm born in Tralee and just pretty much been in Tralee all my life. Moved to Cork there for a few years in the middle, but pretty much been in Tralee all my life. Went to kind of educated through Irish, went to Gaelscoil of Agasman and then on to Gaelcolláiste de Chiri afterwards. So Irish, big part of my life. And
Gaelgor, you're fluent in it, so are you?
I am fluent. It's absolutely loving it. Like I said, it's a big part of my life.
And it kind of seems that like Irish, even nowadays, that it's kind of I don't know whether I use the word dying, but it's kind of, from my own perspective anyway, is it, what's it like now? Is it as popular as before, or is it kind of going down?
To be honest, myself now, a lot of people I would be talking to would be talking Irish anyway from the start, like all my life. So in my circle, like amongst my friends and stuff, we'd all be quite high Irish speakers. So personally, I've never seen an effect, but I think in the broader aspect, there is whether it's dying, I guess it's a hard thing to say, but I think there is a emphasis going on at the moment trying to promote it and trying to just bring it back into more daily life, I think, which is a great thing. It's a great idea.
Definitely. I'd be watching a football game there on TG Cahir, and I'd be like a rabbit stuck in headlights. I don't have a clue. All I'd understand is when they say a goal or the ball or a point. That's as far as my Irish goes. I want to be the best. Do you have any siblings, or are you an only child?
I have a brother and sister, both younger, so I'm the eldest, and they're both now, like, I'm 30 now, and they're both in their 20s, and the same as me, they went to school Australia, and
Kieran,
we are
very good. For people that don't have heard your story, and I, from me speaking to a lot of people, they've heard of it and they know what you're doing now and stuff. Do you wanna give me a kind of an explanation of what exactly is your condition? Because reading up, you had sight up until it was supposed to be late 20s, and you lost it completely at 16. What exactly is the condition that you're living with?
So I was born with a condition called retinoschisis. So it's genetic, and it's like that. Like we always knew I was going to lose my sight. But as you said, it was meant to be kind of mid-20s, kind of like adulthood.
Yeah.
But it happened when I was 16, so it wasn't a great time, to be honest. But I've always been vision impaired, so I never had full sight. So I'd always, even growing up, when people like they're asking questions, especially in school, because you know kids are straight out like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'd be saying that I'm half blind. I'm half blind, not fully blind, just half blind. But yeah, so I never had full sight. But
kids are so straight up these days. Oh, my little cousin Lily Kate, she's only 5, I think, but she climbs up on my lap on the wheelchair if I'm ever on the phone, and that's the end of me, the nice plan cartoons. But like you said, the children, she was on my lap the last day sitting down, and I was showing her pictures of me before my accident, and she kind of looked at me and she was puzzled, and she goes, "So you mean to tell me you actually got up out of your chair?"
Straight out.
Straight out. No beating around the bush. And was there an explanation, or do you know how come you lasted at 16 and it was supposed to be later?
I think it was just one of those things that kind of happens, like, because the condition I have, I'm actually, I think, the worst case in Ireland. So I think even from the start, I was a bit there, all the facts weren't there. So when they were saying mid-20s, I think it was just the way it was going at the time, that's where I was looking. But like that, it just kind of went downhill very fast, and there was something that you couldn't keep track of. Like I said, it just, like, it was just 16, and I kind of woke up one day and it was kind of one eye, and a while later it was just gone in the other eye. There was no...
What was that day like? Because reading up on you, like I was saying, I can only imagine, like, waking up one day and you're fully blind in one eye, like you said. What was that like? That exact moment, like, that must have been a huge shock that it happened so quick.
It was, and I think there was quite a lot of denial, I won't lie. There was kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one half of my brain was like, "I know what's happening." The other half was like, "I don't know what's happening. I'm just not accepting this whatsoever." And I think there was a lot of just denial. Like, I knew it was happening, and like, I could accept it happened, I just couldn't accept why it was happening, if that makes any sense. It was just, as well, I was like in conflict with myself. When the sight in the first eye went, like, it was bad. And I think I remember just telling people about it, and it was hard. But it was just the one eye, like, you know, instead of the other eye, and like that, not long after,
it was
gone. Because I do remember, like, for my 16th birthday, I did have some bit of sight, so like, that's really? Yeah, but by the end of that year, then it was gone. Like that's what I remember.
And like you said, you were kind of in denial at the start, and that's perfectly normal. Like, I was the same when they brought me up my wheelchair first. I kind of looked at them and I was like, "I'll be grand in a few days," but like you said, denial, it's part of life, and everyone that goes through something like yourself, it's obviously going to be part of the story. Before you lost the sight and both eyes, you said that you were always kind of visually impaired from when you were born. How much sight did you actually have before that?
So I would have had enough to kind of like walk around on my own, watch television. Like, I would have been sitting close to television, but like, and like, still able to watch it perfectly. Would have been able to play like video games and stuff like that. Wouldn't have been allowed to play much sport, just for health and safety reasons. But like that, it was, I'd still be able to be out, it's even in school, like out in the park, out like playing, running around. But so the sight wasn't great, but it was functional. But then, say in class, then I'd have special glasses, they were quite thick glasses, and I'd have a monocular, so it was like just a one-sided monocular just to read
the board, is it?
Boards, yeah, things like that. So there was ways around, and like that, no one really, because everyone kind of knew, because like I said, it was always there. So even growing up with the same people in the class, everyone kind of just knew it was just what it was, so there was never any kind of awkwardness or anything like that.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, that's a good thing. When you were going through, say, school at a young age and stuff, was there any kind of an aspect of, I suppose, not bullying, but did people because you know, kids are like, just as well as myself, was there any kind of hard times like that people were saying stuff or anything?
To be honest, not that I can think of, because like I said, everyone kind of always knew from the start like what the story was. But maybe there was, maybe I was ignoring it, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but off the top of my head I can't really think of anything like that.
Yeah, and that's good, because a lot of people that go through stuff like this, you know, especially nowadays, I think it's worse than it was kind of before, really, like, you know, even on the school playground people get bullied, but nowadays when they go home it continues because it's over the phone, whereas years ago, you know, there was no phones. It stopped at the gate.
Exactly. What happened in school stayed in school, and you could kind of, I won't say deal with it, but you could wrap your head around it, maybe kind of contemplate what went wrong, how can you fix it. But as you said, now there's no escaping, there's no mental escape from it whatsoever.
Yeah, no, 100%. Moving on to, I suppose, life now and stuff, how are you getting on these days? Are you, because you, from speaking to you now and even reading up about you, you seem to have a very positive mindset.
Yeah, things are going well. Can't complain too much, I suppose. No, life was good. Happy out, working away, delighted with life. Yeah.
That's the right.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, don't be silly. Life now, you're working on with Virgin Media, I believe, is that?
I am, yeah. So I'm the continuity announcer on Virgin Media 2. So if you're ever watching Virgin Media 2 in the evenings, I'm the guy that kind of comes on before and after shows to tell you what's coming up and give you details on programs and kind of try and throw in an old joke every now and again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, carefully.
Carefully.
Yeah.
I know. I used to hear you before Love Island there when it was on. It's only when you hear your voice and talking to you now, you sound the exact same. Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Darrow Kaneda. I remember there about, was it 3-4 weeks ago that I seen on Twitter that you, when you were doing the announcing before a show, you actually kind of told people that you were blind. What was that like?
It was strange. Like I said, I didn't make a big deal out of it. It was just, I said the words that I'm blind in one of the links, but like that, how people at home wouldn't know who I am and they don't know I'm blind. So it was just a bit, it was strange just to say something really personal like that. But it was nice, like I said, it didn't get any bad feedback or anything like that. It was nice. There was no, like, it was nothing major. Like, it was neither one way nor the other. It was just normal. Everyone found it nice. Like I said, it was just nice to kind of relate to people, kind of just put a bit of personality out there. But that, it was the first time that I would have said it. Like, I've been with them now for just over a year, working for them, and it was just, like I said, it was just nice. It was.
Did it kind of take not a weight off your shoulder, but was it good to let people know and more of an insight into your life?
I think so. Yeah, and it was just, even for other people who'd like to get into media and stuff like that, it's nice, I think, sometimes to know that there is people you can relate to. Because like I don't think there's ever been any other blind continuity announcer, and I do know other people with disabilities, like, who love to get into media. But media is it's a tough industry to get into.
Yeah.
And like, when it comes to having a disability, every industry can be difficult. So I think sometimes when you know that there's other people there, you kind of, it helps kind of.
Definitely, that there is other people, you know, that aren't fully, you know, like, able. They might have different types of disabilities. It's great to kind of show people that you can still get into it. Like you said, media, it's a, and I know myself, it's a hard game to get into. But I suppose especially in your case, did you ever kind of face rejection or anything going into a job?
kind of. So like I said, it is tough, and like I have gotten a few rejections over the years, and yeah, some of them have been quite flowery, we'll say. They've said it in such ways that we're saying it in a nice way, so it's not a bad thing. But
yeah,
it's the usual. It's like, oh, the industry just isn't ready for someone like you yet.
Really?
And I'm like, what does that even, like, what do you mean? And it's just, and it's, they don't want to invest in someone who would need extra equipment, say. And like that, there's grants, there's everything out there for them to do that, but it's the fear of hiring someone with a disability. What if something goes wrong? Even though nothing might go wrong, but it's the fear. But like I said, I've had the words, the industry just isn't ready for people like you, said so many times, it's not even funny at this stage.
That obviously make you feel down, because I know myself, to make me feel down. Do you think that like you said, they're kind of not ready for us. Do you think that when you got into Virgin Media now, that might open a gate and an avenue for other people with disabilities to get into media?
I think so. Because like I said, it knowing that there's people out there who can do these things, there's proof there. That's the proof. If someone with a disability or whatever sort of diversity has a job, it just proves that it is possible. It's there. And these excuses, and like it is, some of it's fear. It is fear on the employer's behalf as well. Like kind of fear and ignorance. But it's 2022. You can't, like, it's no longer, it can't be an excuse any longer, really, can it?
No, it's not good enough, really.
No, it's not.
did they got on to you through, because I follow you on LinkedIn and stuff, and you're always kind of posting different links and stuff that you're saying before programs on Virgin Media. Was it true that they discovered you, or did you apply?
So actually I was applying for a radio job down in Cork, and like that, every time I apply for a job, I also put my demo up online, just so that people can just draw it. I was, even from being on the course in Radio Kerry, it was always told, always put stuff up online, whether you think it's good or not. It other people will, because I think you're always going to be your own worst judge. Like, you're always going to think what you're doing isn't good. But I was always told, put it up. So I did. I applied for a job in Cork, a radio job, and put my link up. And a few days later, I got a message from my now boss in Virgin, Lara Lenehan. And she actually just heard that link. And she said that my voice was a voice, that kind of the voice they were looking for. Had I submitted a demo to a part-time job that they were advertising? And like, I hadn't, because let's be honest, like, a blind man working on television isn't exactly what you'd assume,
especially Virgin Media. It's one of the biggest outlets out there, you know, on TV.
Yeah, so it was actually when she messaged, I was like, at first I was like, is this real? But like, I double checked and it was. So that was a Thursday evening, and I said, yeah, I'd be interested. So she said, send me my email address. I did. And she sent me on a task to do, and she said that she needed it by 10 o'clock the next morning, which
was a quick turnaround.
I know. It was actually like almost being at work. Like, the first task was initial. It was, we need this by tomorrow morning, deadline. And so I sent it in. I heard nothing back, and there's nothing worse than when you send something in and you hear nothing back.
No, it's the fear, isn't it?
Oh, stuff. And then it was the start of the next week, and I just messaged, kind of being cheeky, kind of like, oh, just wondering if you got my email. And then she messaged back saying, Joe, looking for my phone number. because she's got some good news, and I'd progressed on to the to kind of the final part of the interview process. So that was absolutely fantastic.
That's amazing. It's a credit to you, like, to know that that you did get through that. And like you said, it was a quick turnaround. Do you think that, because even my own situation, sometimes I do you think that being blind is harder to hit deadlines?
I think so, yeah. It can be because like that, when it comes to technology, sometimes it kind of just slows things down.
But
sometimes I feel like if there's a deadline, you almost you push yourself a lot more. And I think, but I think when you have a disability as well, you have an extra thing to prove.
Constantly. Because you don't want the boss to be thinking in the back of her head just because he has a disability, will he make it? And I think it's great then when you do make it, because kind of it shows the boss and stuff and the company that you are capable of reaching these deadlines just as quick as anyone else. How common is the condition, Dara, that you're living with in Ireland? I know you said you're one of the worst cases, but even all over the world, is it a very common?
I don't think so, because like the only other person I know that has it would be my cousin, and he'd have a much milder version than I would.
Is it genetic?
It is genetic, yeah. But other than that, like other than the two of us, I actually don't know anyone else who has it. And like I know quite a few people who are blind or vision impaired, and I've never met anyone else with it, which is so unusual.
Yeah. So it is genetic. I was kind of wondering that myself when I was doing my research with working for Virgin. Was it obviously kind of at the end and during COVID that you started working with them. What was that like? Because I know you're working from home now doing the links, are you?
I am, yeah. So obviously Virgin Media Television is based in Dublin, but I actually do work from here in Tralee. So thanks to, you know, modern technology, I can do everything at home, and it all gets sent up to Dublin and sent out on air. But it was weird during, because like, yeah, it was weird that I got the job during COVID, because obviously COVID for everyone was just such a strange time. Everything was very unsure. No one really knew what we were doing. And like that, I got a job during it, which was just very bizarre.
But, better again, like, do you know that?
Yeah, it was just, and the fact that you can work from home as well, it kind of just...
It's ideal.
But yeah, it was lovely. And actually... Going back to doing about my boss and, you know, deadlines and kind of being blind and stuff like that. It was actually about 2 months into the job before my boss actually even realized I was blind. So that was a bit of a fun conversation.
What was her reaction?
It was very good. It was actually very expressive. A lot of language use I don't think I can say on air. She was really excited, very happy. She was shocked and surprised. She was, none of the shock and none of the surprise was negative. It was all positive. It was fantastic. She didn't care. She was just as delighted, because she now can. She's learning as much as I'm learning, if that makes sense, because we're learning how to get around certain aspects of the job, and she's actually then put those into other, like when working with other people, she's actually used those.
Really?
So like we're all learning as we're going along. I think that's what she loves as well about like having someone with disabilities. Like it does open up the world to a broader
it does aspect, 100% which kind of open different avenues, like you said. She can, you know, and if another blind person tries to apply, at least she can say, I have one already and he's doing absolutely perfect. Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to the show. I'm here today with Dara O'Kaneda. Dara has a very interesting story, and if you've missed the start of the interview, you can get it straight after the show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. I remember reading when I was doing my research, there's fewer than 1 in 4 people with a visual impairment that get employed, is it?
Yeah, at the moment there's fewer than one in four people with who are blind in the workforce in Ireland.
Does that annoy you?
It does, because it's a scary thought, and it's like if you'd put that into the rest of the population, like if you'd say fewer than a quarter of the people in Ireland were employed, there'd be a national like uproar, like you couldn't imagine it.
Oh, but there'd be war, yeah.
Yeah, but because it's a statistic to do with a disability, people are kind of like, oh, but sure, that makes sense. And you're like, no, it makes absolutely no sense. It doesn't make any sense. Because the one thing about people with disabilities that I've always found is that we want to work.
Yeah.
We don't want to be sitting at home doing nothing. We don't want to be on benefits. We don't want to just waste away in the corner with a sandwich and a cup of tea. We actually want to be out there working.
You're the exact same as every other employee. Just because you have a visual impairment, you know, that doesn't make you want to stop going in and getting employed, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
What was do you know when you were doing the course in Radio Kerry and I done it the year after you, how did you find that course and how did it come about? Did you always want to get into media, or was it just because I'll explain after, mine was a complete surprise. I'd have ran a mile before my accident if you asked me to get into media. Was it always something that you wanted to?
Always had an interest in media. I think that, you know, that's kind of a standard question answer really, but like I would have been absolutely, I've been the same as you, I would have run a mile, I would have been petrified. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I started the course, I used to be petrified of a microphone. There was no way you'd get me inside the studio.
Really?
Absolutely. And now by the end of it, people would almost be kicking me out of the studio, because I just love even just to sit in there. It's just the atmosphere inside the studio is something I think you can't explain unless you, like there's this, it's an amazing feeling. But
yeah.
So like I said earlier on, I lived in Cork for a few years because I was there for college, but I moved home early, back to Tralee, just before my final year, because my first guide dog, Patsy, she passed away unexpectedly, and I just kind of fell apart, I won't lie. It wasn't
of course, because like, especially in your case, a guide dog, it's your best friend. You've won now, what is his name, Hurricane Hanson. What's your relationship like with Hanson? Because every dog in a family has a brilliant relationship, but I'd imagine in your case it's even more that special, that connection with the dog.
Yeah, like there is, when it comes to a guide dog, I think it's like it is a partnership, it's a union. Like, we depend on each other as much as the other depends on Joe. That sentence made no sense.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah, like we are, like he needs me as much as I need him, and I think that there is, it goes beyond friendship, it goes beyond ownership, it goes beyond, it's a completely different, it's just a different world, to be honest, because he gives, like, guide dogs give the independence, he gives me my independence that I wouldn't have had before. And like when you're out and about, when it comes to roads and stuff, like your guide dog,
it's like your sat nav, isn't it?
Exactly. And it just sounds kind of hyperbolic, but a guide dog keeps you alive. Like,
100%. They make sure
everyone just thinks, oh, I'm just going for a walk. But when you're out with a guide dog, your guide dog is keeping you alive. Like, that's a bond that you can't explain.
100%. You have to kind of, because I there was talks now that I want to get a therapy dog, because my friend in America has one, and the dog can go into the fridge and get the bottle of water and bring it to him. But I know my uncles and stuff, their dogs died, and it killed me. Like, I would be afraid, like, if I get a dog that when he dies. But like, you get 15 good years out of a dog. What was Hanson, do you know the process behind getting a guide dog in Ireland? Is it, because I know in my case a therapy dog, it's crazy, the lists and everything and the waiting. What was it like getting a guide dog? Was the process hard?
So the process, it's you contact HQ in Cork, they're on Model Farm Road, and there is a bit of assessments, there's a few assessments you need to do first to make sure That you know to use a long cane, because just in case your dog gets sick, that you have something to fall back on. You need to make sure that you do know your local area so that you can get out and about with your dog, because that's the thing with a guide dog. The dog tells you how to get around, but you need to tell the dog where to go. So like that it is a union. So you need to know your local area. Just ready for it, because getting a dog is a commitment. So you need to assess your daily life, like what do you get up to? Would you be doing a lot of traveling?
Do they come around to the house and inspect your local area?
They do, yeah. Like there is a few house visits prior, and then when they think they've got a dog for you, because like there's a load of checklists. Like they do match the dog to the person. It's not the case of here's a random dog. So you will get when they think they've got a dog for you, they come down, they call down to you with the dog, or you go up to them depending on whatever is easiest.
Yeah,
and they introduce you to your dog. But they don't tell you the name yet. They just introduce you as just a dog, just a very random dog. They bring you for an initial walk just to see how you get on. You're attached to the dog just by a normal lead and the handle, the standard guide dog handle. But the trainer is also attached to the dog by a long lead just for an extra bit of control, because it's the first time you're walking with the dog. And then they see how you get on, how do you feel, because you need to be as comfortable with the dog as the dog needs to be comfortable with you. And then if you are, and if you're happy to go ahead, they give you the name of the dog, so that you can kind of, that's another level of bonding, because there's a lot
they
of
they obviously
power,
train power with the name them. Do they?
Yeah, they do, yeah. And then after that you head down to Model Farm Road for 3 weeks of intense training with your dog. So you go through everything from grooming to walking out and about in random places that you wouldn't know. But the dog, in this case, the dog actually does know these locations. That's the only exception, is that when you go home, the dog doesn't know. So you need to be on point. But in those situations, the dog is used to those routes. So it's good that way.
Yeah, 100%. What was it like during COVID? Because I'd imagine with a guide dog during COVID and social distancing, it was obviously kind of, I suppose, a shock to you and everyone in the world, but especially to a guide dog, do you know it? Because they're obviously not trained to be 2 meters social distancing apart. What was that like? Was it tough on him?
Yeah, there were a few tough moments during it, especially to start like that, when people would they expect you to move out of the way as much as they would, but sure, the dog doesn't understand social distancing. The dog is just doing his job as normal. So social distancing at the start was very difficult. There was a lot of just awkwardness. It was tough. It was really tough.
Did you get out for? I know you said you love walks. Did you? Did it restrict you more going out for walks, or did you get out as normal?
Normal enough. Because where we are now in town, like I said, we're over towards Manor, so it's nice that we can go for a walk and you're kind of in town next minute. If you keep going far enough, you're kind of out in the country, so it's nice that way. And that's still within your 2 kilometers at the start. But it was nice. It was we did get out for the morning walks, but like that, there was no working walks into town or anything like that. That was quite restrictive. And I think we both got quite sick of each other there around the middle of it. We're sick, kind of sick of seeing each other around the house.
Like two brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Until it came to dinner time, then I'd see him without failure at 4 o'clock every day. It's like, where's my dinner?
He knows what he wants. What was it like traveling with Henson? Do you know, have you been abroad with him? And guide dogs, they're obviously allowed to go on planes, I presume, are they?
They are. So, I've only been abroad with Henson once back in 2018. So it was just before I started the course. I had a radio course, and sure, after that, then COVID kicked in. So, there hasn't been much traveling since. But hopefully now that things are going back to normal, we'll be back out and about. But so Henson has been to London. We've he's been to London once and like that, and managed to go right in the middle of summer in the middle of a London heat wave. So he was not too impressed with me, but it was great, and we could fly from Farn 4 as well, so that was really handy.
Ideal.
Oh, love Farn 4, absolutely love it.
Now we're going to go for our very last ad break. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these. Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with Dean O'Connell, the last part of the show. If you're just joining us, don't worry, because we got you covered. You can get the interview straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section, or you can now get this show as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Dean O'Connell. Do you know the way you were saying that it took a while for your boss to find out that you were blind, and it was like you said a few months later or something? I know the line, not every disability is visible, and it's so true, because obviously in my case you can see they're in a wheelchair, or if someone has a amputated leg you can see that they have a prosthetic, but in your case it's not visible. Have you found yourself in that situation with people many times?
If I'm out and about with Hanson and stuff, he kind of gives it away. But if I'm out just on my own, or like even on a night out with friends and stuff like that, you do get a bit of kind of strange comments and stuff. Never anything bad. But like you do have to explain to people, and then of. You always get there like, oh, but you don't look blind, or oh, you don't look disabled. I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, I didn't realize there was a look. I didn't realize we were meant to go around with a big sign going, hi, by the way. So there's been a few funny conversations like that, never anything bad. But
when I was in town there a few weeks ago, I was going pulling into a blue parking space, wheelchair parking, and this fella, he just pulled in front of me. He had no badge or nothing. He was driving a van, but I had to park up the top of the street. And when I came down, I kind of waited for him. I kind of gave out to him, you know that. And he was like, "Oh, I didn't know that you were handicapped," he said, and all this kind of comments and stuff. But when he said that, I was biting my tongue not to tear into him giving out what I just said. When I was leaving, I said, "You'll never know when you might need that blue parking space."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, after, and it's all true, isn't it?
It's stuff. It's so true. It's so true.
What is technology like in your life now? I was very interested to ask you this question. Like, do you know assistive technology? Do you know when you were even coming on here now talking to me, and we were texting yesterday? Is it a lot of kind of voice commands, or how do you get around technology on a daily basis?
So I deal with a lot of screen readers. So it's like software that goes onto either your phone or your laptop or any kind of modern technology, and it will tell you what's happening on the screen and kind of what you're doing as you're going along. So I use an iPhone. So the software is automatically built into an iPhone, so it's really handy. And whatever you're doing on the screen, whatever you're your finger touches, or when you're typing, it will tell you exactly what happens. And like that, then when you send a text message, like when you were texting me, everything you said, the phone would just read out.
Really?
So it's really handy. It's come a long way. Because I remember.
And it's only better. It's going to get.
Exactly, because even the voices, which sounds like a very basic thing, but the voices these days are much better than they used to be. Because I remember the first bit of screen reading software I got, which I would have been back in first class, and it was very robotic, that really kind of standard kind of robotic tinny voice, and now they almost sound kind of human, which is almost kind of terrifying. But they've come a long way.
Can you read Braille?
No, I can't. I did start learning years ago, actually, not long after I lost my sight.
Must be very difficult.
It is. It's like any language. People who do it from the very start, very easy for them. But it's quite hard to learn later on. It's possible. It is possible. But it's one of those things you have to kind of stay on top of. And unfortunately, I did not. Now, if I started again, I might be able to.
Yeah.
But at the current moment, I don't really need it because with modern technology. But like that, technology can fail, and then if that goes, I'm stuck. I'm completely stuck. But yeah, it is nice though, because I have the basics still. And it's a nice skill to have, but I wouldn't be fluent, or I wouldn't be able to speed read or anything like that.
Yeah, something that I was, before we finish up, I was very interested in, and I know it might be kind of a weird question, but do you know the way you had sight for, you had such a percentage of sight for so long? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, do you know when you have when you have a dream, do you dream with sight? Like, can you remember from all them years back then what it's like when you're dreaming now?
Yeah, so I do. I do dream with sight, which is a strange concept, but I still do. I still remember everything when I wake up. I can remember what I saw in my dreams. So it is a really strange concept, but
yeah,
it's nice. It is.
Nice. I know it might be a kind of a weird question to ask you, but it was something that I was very kind of curious about. I always thought what it was like for people in your situation. I was watching a podcast there you were on, I don't know, it was last year or something, the One Leg One Eye podcast, is that what it's called?
One Leg One Eye. Yeah.
And you in that podcast, the three of you, I was bent over laughing. You were having a bit of, I suppose, your humor about your situation and the other two lads. How important is humor in your situation?
I think it's really important. I think like everyone's level of humor obviously is different, and it's very humor is relative, but I think it's really important. I think not saying you have to laugh at disability, but if you stay in the dark, you'll live in the dark. I think you just need to have a bit of humor, laugh about it, and just not even laugh at it. It's laugh at the situations you end up in.
Yeah.
Because it's a good way of bringing the story to other people, and even though it might be a funny story, it'll get people thinking about the situations into which you can, with a disability, into which you get, and it makes them, other people think, be they someone with a disability or not. But I think humor is a great great medium for a conversation starting.
Yeah,
I think it's just really important.
And two more questions out before we finish up. Do you have any plans or ambitions for the near future? Do you have any, I suppose, goals, or do you want to get travelling anywhere more, or do you have any plans?
No, I really want to get back travelling. That is definitely something, because like that, obviously before COVID and before I had Hanson's, like I said, Hanson's my second guide dog. But with Patsy beforehand, she and I would have travelled quite extensively. We would have been to UK a couple of times. I lived in the US for a while with her, and
really,
I really miss traveling. It's one of my passions, other, like, outside of media and just radio and television and all that kind of stuff. Traveling is my other passion. It's my other great love, I think.
Does it drive you mad if you're out with Hanson walking in people? Because I remember once when, before my accident, there was a woman out training guide dogs and they had the vest on and I went up rubbing it. You know, I didn't think twice. Do a lot of people come up to you and rub Hanson? Like, does he kind of wear a vest to say, or does it? Because that must be kind of annoying if people come up rubbing him when he's trying to do a job for you.
It can be, but I think, as I always say, if you ask before doing it, that's the big difference. So if you ask, oh, is it okay if I say hello, it means a lot, because that way you can settle the dog, you can get him sitting in a certain position, and so that when you take off again, there's absolutely no change to your travel, to your path, the sort of looking for your path. And yeah, so like I said, always ask, and if the person does say no, don't get offended, because you don't know what's actually happening. Yeah. You don't know that the person with the guide dog could be in a rush, could be running for something, and if you like, by just you stopping for a few minutes, it can derail like someone's plans. It can make a big difference. So always ask, but never get offended if the person says no. And like that, just think of yourself that they don't know what's happening in your head. You don't know what's happening in their head.
Absolutely. And when Hansen goes home, when the vest does come off, or is he like any other dog? Does he love to get excited and run around and stuff?
Yeah, he's like I said, Hurricane Hansen. He's a messer. He's an absolute messer. We have a Jack Russell as well, and two of them, like they would destroy the house if you weren't paying attention to them. They're always fighting. They're always like wrestling. Like she's tiny. She's a tiny Jack Russell, and he's like, he's a Labrador. He's like 30, I think he's 37 kgs. Sure, you see the two of them fighting, and there's he thinks he's small, she thinks she's huge, and just they destroy the gaff. They absolutely wreck the place.
You have to make sure so that they don't go mad inside in the house.
Stop. They're brilliant together.
Dara, come here. Thanks so much for coming on now, and I really appreciate your time coming on and sharing your story. And I know a lot of the listeners and stuff will love it, because it's very interesting, and it's the first person with a visual impairment that I have interviewed. So thanks a million for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. It was brilliant.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can get in contact with me through my Instagram, ianoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.